This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for Friday the 27th of August 2021. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. I am your presenter, Roy Faithful. And your other readers today are Heather Thorpe-Tracy.
Hello.
And Noel Thorpe-Tracy.
Hello.
And the extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 27th of August have been edited by Sonia Phillips and Sheila Shepherd. If you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings of the Winchester Talking newspaper and the Winchester Talking magazine, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone the contact number which is on the key fob attached to the memory stick. If there's a problem with your Sovereign player, please try plugging it in and recharging before returning it as faulty. Now, the main headlines this week are Probe into Busker Clash, Lorry Driver Guilty of Killing Motorcyclist, and Revealing the Secret of King Alfred's Last Resting Place. So we have the story behind the first headline, please. Heather.
Probe into Busker Clash. Winchester Cathedral says it is investigating a confrontation between a priest and a well-known busker. It has denied the busker, Marvin B. Naylor, was ordered to stop playing, but was asked to move his pitch. But its statement added, "This gives us much cause for reflection and is being currently considered in our staff and clergy training." As reported in the Chronicle last week, Mr. Naylor has complained after he says he was ordered to stop playing by a priest who was aggressive and intimidating. In a letter to the Chronicle, Mr. Naylor said the cleric's behaviour was also disgusting and unacceptable. The priest has not been identified. The incident happened on the square on Thursday, August the 12th, when Mr. Naylor was playing in the open space outside the cathedral close. Mr. Naylor has appealed for photographs or CCTV footage of the incident. In a statement on Monday, the cathedral, which appears to know the identity of the cleric, said, "The cathedral takes all complaints very seriously and is investigating the matter described by Mr. Naylor in the Chronicle last week. We understand that the clergyman spoke to Mr. Naylor not in order to ask him to stop playing, but to ask him to move his pitch slightly to one side. As Mr. Naylor was sighted in the centre of the pavement, as is shown in the photograph, it was thought that Mr. Naylor appeared to be blocking the main thoroughfare into the entrance to the cathedral. It is a great regret to us that the encounter left both parties upset, which is the last thing that the cathedral would wish, and gives us much cause for reflection. It is being currently considered in our staff and clergy training. Busking is a distinctive feature of Winchester city life, often contributing to the joy and harmony of our streets and the sense of vibrant life that we can all enjoy." The statement continued, "We wish to engage with Mr. Naylor constructively about this and look forward to speaking with him soon." Mr. Naylor met the Dean of Winchester, the Very Reverend Catherine Ogle, on Tuesday. He said, "I had a very productive meeting with the Dean for over an hour, where the Dean expressed great sympathy and concern for my well-being and has assured me the matter is being looked into. She told him she would be speaking to the priest involved, whose identity has not been revealed." And Mr. Naylor added, "I would like to thank all the people of Winchester who have come up to me to express their concern about how I was treated and also their enthusiasm for my music. It has really touched my heart and I can't thank everyone enough."
Let's have the story behind the second headline, please, Noel.
Yes, lorry driver guilty of killing motorcyclist. A lorry driver who collided with a motorcyclist and left him to die when he drove onto the wrong side of the road has been found guilty of causing death by dangerous driving. Lucien Sorin Todor overtook a cyclist, which he said he only saw at the last moment, as he drove along the A32 at Warnford on June 29th, 2019, crossing double white lines on a restricted bend. The 52-year-old forced two cars, an Audi and a Vauxhall Sphera, to drive onto a grass verge to avoid a collision, but 22-year-old Jack Burgess, who was riding a Yamaha motorcycle, braked and fell off his motorbike. The wheels of Todor's trailer scrubbed against Mr. Burgess's head, causing fatal injuries. He died the following day in hospital. Todor has been on trial at Winchester Crown Court and on Friday was found guilty of causing death by dangerous driving. He had pleaded guilty to causing death by careless driving. The verdict was given by a majority of 10-2 after the jury were granted a majority direction by the Recorder of Winchester, Judge Angela Morris. As the verdict was read out, there were cries from the public gallery from Mr. Burgess's family, who hugged one another. Todor's family walked out as the judge spoke to the court. Todor, who was an agency driver working for Fowler Welsh at the time of the crash, will be sentenced on a date to be fixed. The judge said, "This is a very serious matter, and there is only one inevitable sentence at the end of this. A psychiatric report and a pre-sentence report will be carried out." Speaking to Todor, the judge said, "You must understand, Mr. Todor, there is only one sentence here, and it is likely to be a substantial sentence. I have not made up my mind as to the extent of that at this stage. That is for another day when these reports are prepared." During the trial, it was heard that Todor of Andrew Crescent, Waterlooville, was on the phone using a Bluetooth earpiece when the crash happened and continued the call for the 2 minutes that he stopped before leaving. In his defence, Todor told the court he overtook the cyclist to avoid hitting him as he popped out from nowhere as he was travelling down a road which had dark and light patches due to overhanging trees.
The third headline story is Revealing the Secrets of King Alfred's Last Resting Place. A record number of people attended Hampshire's Hyde 900's fifth community dig last week in five gardens close to the site of Hyde Abbey, Alfred the Great's last resting place. During 260 people took part, including 80 children, along with the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Vivian Archwell, and MP Steve Bryan, who was accompanied by his two children. The results exceeded all expectations, with finds of both abbey walls and floor services. The expert archaeologists in charge chose locations for the trenches based upon extensive research supplemented by ground-penetrating radar surveys carried out by David Ashby of the University of Winchester. On day one, there was a find of silver three-penny coins, with the day starting to see the beginnings of mortar from the destruction of the abbey as a result of Henry VIII's dissolution of the monasteries. Finds on day three included fragments of medieval pottery and the beginnings of sightings of the robbed-out foundations of the 14th century walls of the abbey. Roman pottery and medieval drinking vessels were discovered on day four, and by the end of the day, diggers had revealed foundations of three walls previously unknown and stonework of the original 12th century abbey. The walls included an original 12th century section of plastered wall with the original tiled wall adjacent to it. Up to now, the location of the cloisters has been a matter of guesswork, but the architectural advisor to the project, Dr. John Crook, now feels that it may be necessary to redraw the image of the abbey as a result of the new discoveries. Hyde 900 trustee and dig organiser David Spurling expressed delight with the outcome of the event. He said a quarter of those attending were children who were excited and just loved to be learning about archaeology, and so much more new knowledge of the abbey has been gained this year than is ever expected. Visitors to the dig included Tim Tatton Brown, consultant archaeologist to St George's Chapel, Windsor, and Salisbury Cathedral and Professor Martin Biddle, who has taken a keen interest in the progress of Hyde 900 digs over the years. The dig was supported by grants from the Council of British Archaeology, Wessex, and local estate agents Belgarum, with graphic design from Adam Architecture and the loan of equipment from Winchester Archaeology Rescue Group. And this article was accompanied by two nice photographs. One of four volunteers on their knees they're in a dig, and they've got a tray full of stuff that they found. They're looking very pleased with themselves. Mm-hmm. And the other one has some children looking absolutely delighted with what has been found. And that was the end of all of the headline stories. Now we continue with death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, Bulgarum diary, first person, editorial comment, and letter from Westminster. We'll end with items of general news. Heather's going to start with the death notices.
There are 6 death notices this week. Beattie, Dorothy Beattie, died peacefully on the 12th of August, aged 93. Bishop, Edward Ted Bishop, passed away peacefully on Sunday, the 8th of August. Holmes, Jeff Holmes, on the 17th of August, peacefully, at home in St. Leonard's, Ringwood, aged 91. Thomas, Paul Thomas, passed away peacefully on the 5th of August, aged 79 years. Tusser, George Frank Tusser, died peacefully on the 11th of August in France following a fall. Williams, Constance Sarah Williams, Connie, passed away peacefully at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital on the 18th of August, aged 89 years.
Now Noel has got Christian comment.
Yes, Christian comment this week is headed The Kindness of Strangers. I know I've written about this subject before and also about random acts of kindness, but these are subjects that continue to fascinate me. Not only when I or members of my family benefit from these, but almost every day when I read the posts of the online neighbourhood group that I belong to. Lost keys, lost phones are often reunited with owners. People who fall, who are in accidents, are helped along with other acts of kindness, as well as gifts of tea and cakes from the tea lady. Something else that I find quite amazing is the success of the various GoFundMe appeals on Facebook and the internet. Not just appeals for charities, but for children with inoperable tumours who are then sent abroad for treatment not offered on the NHS. Even athletes in the recent Olympics managed to get funding when they were denied funding through official channels. Another reminder of this subject was the recent book of the week on Radio 4, Hello Stranger, How We Find Connection in a Disconnected World by Will Buckingham. This book is the account of the author exploring his own grief and loss following the death of his partner from breast cancer. Instead of retreating from the world, he made a conscious decision to do the opposite and try to build new connections, not as a way of escaping the grief, but as a way through it to something new. He writes that grief is a deeply individual experience. It is about the loss of someone or something unique and specific to us. However, it is also about a loss of connection. There is no more common human experience than that of grief. It happens to us all, at some point in our lives. And when it does, it suggests that it should be beneficial and restorative to try and reconnect with the world. Most of us feel uneasy when meeting strangers, even more so since lockdown, as we are no longer used to interacting with strangers when out and about. But research suggests that most of our interactions with strangers turn out to be positive. And if we make the chance, if we take the chance, when we make the effort to connect with strangers, we can find ourselves really changed. In the past 18 months, the world has changed around us. Perhaps we have changed as well. Many of us have suffered loss one way or another. But now we are bravely trying to go beyond our doors. One way of taking these steps is to start reconnecting with the many strangers with whom we share the world. In these new connections, we can find new possibilities and new ways of living.
We'll continue with letters to the editor. If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836, email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, S0238AL. 14 letters this week, and I will start. calls for shame. Sir, our mayor opens an expanded facility for the city's food bank to deal with increased demand. That was in Chronicle, August the 19th. A cause for celebration or shame? Stephen Percy, Easton.
Farewell to popular city priest. Mark Byford writes, Sir, last Sunday morning on the 22nd of August at St Paul's Church in the city, the congregation gave an emotional and highly charged farewell to the rector, Peter Seal, who has served the parish of St Matthew with St Paul for 20 years. I cannot overestimate the positive and profound impact that Peter has made on so many people. He'd been a brilliant rector, much loved and greatly admired by so many people for so many reasons. Ministerially, he has been the most inspiring clergyman and one of the most gifted preachers I've ever known. Pastorally, he is such a superb listener and a truly compassionate and kind individual. For example, I will never forget how he acted in 2013 when my wife Hilary's mother lived her final days in hospital in Winchester. His impact then will stay with Hilary and me for the rest of our lives. Under his leadership, the Book of Common Prayer and the long-held traditions of Anglicanism have been celebrated and cherished at St Matthew's. And meanwhile, at St Paul's, he has ensured around 100 to 120 people are at the weekly 9:30 a.m. Eucharist service in normal times, the church full with a wide demographic of young families, middle-aged people and the elderly. That is a huge achievement in 2021. The recent Building for Life project will be one of Peter's great legacies, and the transformation and renovation of both the St Matthew's and St Paul's buildings have been achieved with great ambition, taste and execution. All in all, he's been extraordinary. And he and his wife Julia, who has provided such amazing rock-like support, will be so missed. Most profoundly for me personally, Peter has been a great and deeply loved friend, and importantly, a true inspiration and strengthener in relation to my own faith. What a privilege to have experienced him and witnessed his talents at first hand. Like so many people who've been touched by his gifts and presence, I wish him and Julia a wonderful new chapter in their lives as he retires and they move to Dorset. In admiration and gratitude, Mark Byford, Clifton Hill, Winchester. And there is a lovely, charming picture of Peter Seal and his wife taken on the Sunday that he retired.
Fiona Mather writes about a lack of judgment. Sir, the Liberal Democrat administration at Winchester City Council are proceeding with construction works for a multi-storey car park on the Voltex site on the edge of the site of special scientific interest of the Water Meadows, the Itchen and the Itchen Navigation, despite the highly controversial planning permission being under judicial review. Chronicle, August the 12th. It was the administration's alleged errors that led to the review. Would it not be wiser for them to wait for the result of it rather than mark their own homework? Or are they so confident they will get through unscathed? Local residents who oppose the project are already suffering noise and disruption from noisy construction machinery. This is yet another example of the Liberal Democrats' lack of judgment and disregard for the electorate to which they are accountable. Fiona Mather, St Michael's Gardens, Winchester.
This one is called A New Reality by Rob Parker. Sir, with respect, Christopher Sharrett and Tim Major in the Chronicle Letters Orders, August 12th, are missing the point of Malcolm Wallace's letter of August the 5th. Climate change is happening. We are in emergency situation, not now, not in 2050. Vehicle pollution is exacerbating it. Therefore, increasing the usage of the M3 and A34 by easing the traffic jam at Windle at huge expense is pre-climate change awareness thinking. Hassle-free road use can no longer be considered an entitlement. The argument put forward in Malcolm Wallace's letter was for putting the bit of the infrastructure budget money earmarked for M3J9 into safe cycling rather than easing driver discomfort at Windle. That looks like a small but obvious step in the difficult process of adapting to the new reality. And that was by Rob Parker, Backstreet, St Cross.
Property costs. Nigel Samuels writes, Sir, earlier this month Winchester was confirmed as the least affordable place to buy property in the United Kingdom. This announcement reminds us all of the great divide in wealth and opportunity here in Winchester, and how difficult it is for many people to get or stay on the property ladder or to rent a home. The average home in Winchester costs 14 times average earnings. However, the laws of average masks a desperate situation for the many Winchester residents whose income is far below average, who are subject to the vagaries of the gig economy, or whose jobs have been sustained through furlough. Recent figures from the New Economics Foundation suggest that more than 650,000 jobs will still need the furlough scheme when it is due to end next month. Those employees face possible redundancy, and at Emmaus we are only too aware how easily a loss of employment can lead to a loss of home. We are fortunate that Winchester is blessed with organisations dedicated to ensuring people receive support if they cannot afford their housing. At Emmaus, we provide homes and work with training for up to 40 ex-homeless people. This is due in part to the continued generosity and support of local residents and institutions who help us through thick and thin, and for that we are most grateful. Such partnerships are more needed now, more than ever. Perhaps a truly joined-up initiative will ensure that people facing post-COVID job loss do not end up without a place to live. Nigel Samuels, Chief Executive, Emmaus, Hampshire, Bar End Road, Winchester.
And Chris Gillam introduces us to Planet South Wanston. Excuse me. Sir, judging from Chronicle letters in the past few months, there appears to be a population in South Wanston that lives on a different planet from the rest of us, where the laws of physics and logic seem not to apply. Christopher Sharrett says, the Green Party is simply peddling the same old policy when it suggests alternative to road building. Chronicle letters, August the 12th. In the year of COP26, when many of the long-predicted effects of global heating are becoming terrifyingly manifest, the same old policies that have brought about this imminent catastrophe are precisely those that Mr. Sharrett is so keen to keep promoting. No, of course, spending the £175 million planned for the M3 Junction 9 on cycle lanes will not solve all the problems brought about by the insane UK transport policy of the last 70 years. Malcolm Wallace's letter, Chronicles July 29th, did not suggest that it would. Mr. Sharrett simply indulges in the old logical fallacy of arguing the general from the particular. But the one thing we know for certain is that the M3 Junction 9 project will make everything worse. It will generate carbon emissions in itself and in the behaviour it encourages. It will cause more traffic, more pollution, more social exclusion and more ill health everywhere. And it will not solve the single problem it aims to solve. Road building has never reduced the overall congestion it has generated. If Mr. Toad letters can always be expected when anyone suggests a rational alternative transport policy, what is more disturbing in the year of COP26 is the new climate change denial that characterises the present government. Human-caused climate change is acknowledged, but the necessity for doing anything is denied. Thus we see Flick Drummond boasting that the UK is a world leader in cutting emissions, which is simply not true, and what emissions have been cut are not the result of any Conservative government action designed to reduce them. And Winchester's MP is all in favour of continued road and airport expansion. Well, he can count on the votes in Planet B, South Wanston. Chris Gillam, Upper High Street, Winchester.
This is by Stephen Hart, and it's called Lost Opportunity. Sir, there is much to be positive about the movement strategy, but the council needs to be much more courageous if the city is to address climate change and compete with other cities like Salisbury and Chichester. Much more traffic must be removed to substantially increase the pedestrian area and get car users to use public transport, park and ride, or access on bike or foot. Buses stopped all through traffic for the city centre. There are queues, but more and more people appear to be using bus, train or park and ride. The importance of the High Street as the primary pedestrian way through the centre of the historic walled city has not been understood as a totality, with appreciation of its historic and cultural significance. The top end of the High Street remains dislocated from the pedestrianised part and will remain a poor experience for the pedestrian and visitors seeking out the sights at the top end of the High Street. I wonder if many people will find the strategy skewed to a highway's perception, with road use prioritised over pedestrians and not adequately encompassing other values. Stephen Hart, Sleepers Hill, Winchester.
And Brendan Brockway writes about the developers. Sir, developers in Winchester must surely have a responsibility to the wider community. Inadequate restoration works, including sunken road surfaces, access for development, broken curbstones, damaged footpaths and cycleways, blocked road gullies, all need to be actioned, and these costs involved should no longer be borne by the public purse. Motorists, cyclists, pedestrians, visitors and presumably potential property buyers are all currently subjected to a third world experience, writes Brendan Brockway of Stony Lane, Week, Winchester.
And Martin Letts writes about Salisbury as a rival to Winchester. Sir, today I visited Salisbury. I have to say that Salisbury on a Monday was buzzing. This seems to be in sharp contrast to the centre of Winchester, which seems to have lost its commercial heart. My wife and I used the park and ride bus, which for us OAPs was free. We used our bus passes on the park and ride bus with no charge to park. Almost everyone on our bus was an OAP. Like it or not, we OAPs have the time and hopefully some cash to spend in the city. The bus was an electric vehicle, EV. There was even a small machine inside to presumably validate some types of bus pass while the bus was in motion, reducing the time at bus stops. We visited the cathedral, which cost us £8.60, including gift aid. The ticket remains valid for 1 year. I understand a visit to Winchester Cathedral would be in excess of £10. Meanwhile, the shops were buzzing with plenty of people around. There also seemed to be a smaller proportion of empty shops in Salisbury compared to Winchester. May I suggest Winchester City Council adopts a similar scheme with respect to its park and ride? In Bishop's Waltham, you can park for 1 hour free. In the newly opened Jubilee Hall car park, I think it's 2 hours free. So Bishop's Waltham is buzzing too. Free parking does make a difference to the footfall in town centres. Are there any plans to introduce EV buses in Winchester? It did make me wonder how long the Silver Hill development has been in its planning approval stage. Is it 20 years or am I mistaken? Martin Lewis, Curdridge Lane, Waltham Chase.
And this is by Lisa Kappa, MBE. And it's GCSE results. Sir, the recent GCSE results highlight the resilience and determination of our country's young people, who on average have missed 14 weeks of learning. At NACRO, our further education and skills centres teach some of the most disadvantaged 16 to 19-year-olds. Around half our students started the pandemic without a digital device or Wi-Fi to study on. Yet today, despite coming to us without GCSEs in English and maths, they have gone to achieve great resit results, with an increase of high passes four and above. For them, this is the golden ticket to a good job or further education. This success has been a result of hard work and determination of our learners with support from our staff, but it has been bolstered by the use of the government's recovery tuition funding. Early analysis of our data shows that those who took part in the scheme achieved 15% higher pass rates compared to those who did not participate. We now need this funding boost to become permanent for those who need to fill gaps in learning or face multiple barriers to education and skills. Well done to all those who are celebrating their achievements this week in a year to remember. And that was from Lisa Kappa, MBE, Director of Skills and Education, NACRO, London.
A collapsed wall. Simon Lever writes, Sir, Winchester is an historic icon and former capital of England, where its heritage and ancient structures dating back well before King Alfred the Great. The age of the Hyde Wall is yet to be proven, but needs preserving for present and future generations. King Alfred the Great did so much for Winchester. There are many walls in Winchester, including North Walls and original city wall around Wolvesey Castle. At least, work has commenced to preserve this very special and tangible part of our history. Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm.
And Elaine Ehrenfried writes about a certain busker. Sir, I understand the Bible is littered with quotes on compassion. If I was going to summarise it, be rich in good deeds would probably cover it, Ephesians 2:10. The cleric who approached busker Marvin B. Naylor needs to read his Bible again, Chronicle August the 19th. If I were him, I would look at this outburst and see where it came from within himself. Meanwhile, I follow no specific Christian path, but I do believe in decency and understanding towards others as a matter of course. If a busker plays in the high street, perhaps we can reasonably assume he's not in the top 10% of British earners, so he really doesn't need aggravation from the church. Christianity doesn't have the monopoly over decent behaviour. There's loads of us out there who subscribe to the ethos but are not churchgoers. Why is that? Maybe this incident might highlight a problem. It's no good signing up to the Bible and not carrying it through. God is full of compassion, Psalms 103:13. I'm a non-believer, but you could at least abide by your own rules. Elaine Ehrenfried, Coach Hill Close, Eastleigh.
And this is from Paul Hickey. Sir, I was very disappointed to hear of a local priest telling Marvin the busker to stop playing. Chronicle, August the 19th. Marvin really brightens up Winchester High Street and brings it to life. I often sit down and listen to him playing. He's a very good guitar player and plays a wide variety of music from pop, rock, show tunes, musical, jazz and classical. I particularly like his covers of The Shadows, The Beach Boys, The Lambeth Walk, some Beatles songs and many more others. He also adds to his repertoire quite often. Marvin should also have a go at writing some of his own songs. I'm sure he could do it. He's a very good musician and understands very well how songs are constructed, as is evident in the wide variety of musical styles that he plays. I speak as a fellow amateur musician and as an amateur songwriter myself. Marvin, why not give it a go? Paul Hickey, Parchment Street, Winchester.
Jeremy France writes somewhat more coolly. Busker and Priest, it's the headline. Sir, although I agree that Marvin is one of the best buskers in Winchester, there seems to be a lot of confusion over the rights of buskers, businesses and the public. A quick read of the Buskers' Code of Practice, produced for guidance by the council, will show people how to respect each other. And if buskers comply with the code, then no disturbing scenes are necessary. So if Marvin looks it up on the council website, as does our mysterious priest, I'm sure the world will become a better place. One could also apply this to driving and the highway code. Jeremy France, High Street, Winchester.
And that was the last letter to the editor. Thank you to all of our contributors. Heather is now going to read an alternative look at the news with Belgarum Diary.
There are two items from Belgarum today, and the first is headed Bins and a Roman Temple. And there's a picture of a whole lot of bins in a rather nicely floored open square. I'm not sure where it is in Winchester, but it's somewhere near St George's Street. Is there an uglier spot than the 20 bins and the litter in the open space on St George's Street? They service the businesses such as Ask Italian Restaurant and Russell and Bromley. No criticism is intended of those businesses, as their space is constrained and the bins do have to go somewhere. But the ugliness is compounded because they are left on top of the stone outlines of a Roman temple. It marks the spot of the place of worship which Belgarum seems to remember was used by followers of a Roman religion based on the god Mithras. And the second item is about the opening day of the Victorian waterworks. It's a rare chance to see how water is pumped from deep within the Hampshire Downs to homes across the county. Twyford Waterworks, which have been in operation for more than 120 years, opens to the public on Sunday, September the 5th. I think that's Sunday week. Visitors will see the machinery that makes clean water available to thousands, and much of the site will be open and in operation. A spokesperson said, "We continue to take the health and welfare of our visitors and volunteers seriously during the continuing pandemic. So while we can lift restrictions on group sizes, we do request that social distancing is maintained and face coverings are worn inside the buildings unless you have an exemption. It is planned that the following will be available for visitors to see. A Haythorne Davy steam pumping engine at work, supplied with steam from the Babcock and Wilcox boiler. A large Ruston diesel pumping engine, with one running at various times during the day. An 1895 Crossley gas engine and other smaller pumps in operation. And the lime kilns and water softening works, including the hydraulic water-powered engines working. There is also a nature trail with a pond and a hide. We'll see industrial railway in action, and there will be visiting exhibits and displays, all at Twyford Waterworks on Hazley Road."
And this week's first person is by George Hayter, and Noel's going to read it.
Yes, George Hayter says, "These days, who to believe? Even the Chronicle cannot be a total mirror of life in the Winchester area. No local newspaper can hope to reflect everything happening in its catchment. A finite staff of humans will never have enough hours in the day to report every event in every corner of our town and the surrounding countryside. But you can be pretty sure that every story in the quality papers, such as the Chronicle, is true. Of course, you can always argue that this or any other newspaper is biased, particularly if you hold strong political views. Committed Tory or Labour readers will often feel that even the most conscientious report on party political matters is not quite fair to their side. As one of Britain's oldest papers, it was founded 249 years ago this week, the Chron has played its noble part in purveying accuracy. I believe the trust that British people have had in printed news since those times has reduced the rumours that up till then surely inhibited meaningful political debate. UK radio and TV have generally followed the commendable precedent set by newspapers. But in this century, public trust in the media has come under threat from social media. Although quality national papers have long peddled bias through inclusion or omission of contradictory information, they have generally been accurate, factually. But much of the news on social media is horribly inaccurate. Too many social media stories are misleading conspiracy theories, and I'll come back to them in a minute. First, I'll make up a conspiracy theory myself. Who better to include than Donald Trump, who managed to deceive millions of Americans into believing that scheming officials cheated him out of victory in last year's presidential election. With his portly figure, Trump closely resembles Boris Johnson. Both men exhibit short attention span and a propensity for making grandiose policy announcements. Their identical hairstyles are the final proof that they are in fact one and the same person. Their single identity explains why they have never appeared in public together. Their supposed joint appearance at the UN G7 etc. etc. were in fact clever deceptions. Television engineers use split-screen manipulation to make the two national leaders appear to stand side by side. The half-screen, apparently occupied by Trump, was in fact always made using computer-generated footage of Johnson looking and behaving exactly like Trump. Johnson was able to adopt the American billionaire's identity on screen through use of new human image synthesis software. Recently, Boris has taken to disguising himself as the ex-president almost every day, allowing the real Trump to go into reclusive retirement in Florida. Boris is secretly adopting this Trump ego more and more. Digitally disguised as Trump, he hopes to use the new technology to become the next US president. The British Prime Minister plans to campaign for the US presidency in 2024 without ever leaving Downing Street. Too ridiculous for people to believe? Then try this for size. Thousands of Americans have been convinced by social media that Hillary Clinton ran a paedophile ring from the Washington Pizza Parlour. And here in the UK, many Brits were persuaded that a pandemic was an invention of Bill Gates, who planned to use COVID jabs to implant microchips in everybody. Years ago, many around the world believed a rumour that the Apollo moon landings were in fact a deceit hatched up by scientists who filmed the bogus lunar exploration in a Hollywood film studio. For centuries now, we in Britain have enjoyed the informed political debate made possible by media, by newspapers and other dependable media, while in the world's dictatorships, truth remains repressed. So, it is sad to see that even in democracies, truth now seems to be on the wane because of social media. And I fear it's no good me protesting here. The conspiracy theorists will think that this essay is just part of the media's plan to hide the truth.
Now I've got the editorial comment. Research needed into road safety. The statistics tell us that the roads are far safer now than they were 50 years ago, despite the vast increase in the number of vehicles. Road and vehicle design, signage, attitudes to drink, driving have all improved. The number of deaths is still too high, but the trend is going in the right direction. Yet still we report on cases such as lorry driver Lucien Sorin Todor, who caused a fatal accident on the A32, killing a motorcyclist. He overtook despite the double white lines on the road and while he was on a call. We also report the lunatic behaviour of a driver, Sean Smith, on the A303, who could easily have caused a fatal incident. The Italians have a saying, "The mother of the idiot is always pregnant." Yet we should not accept that such incidents are inevitable. What is it that turns some people, almost invariably male, into driving so badly? University research into such behaviours has been undertaken, and it needs to continue to constantly look into how the root cause of such driving. Perhaps it could delve into attitudes towards buskers, believed to be on or obstructing cathedral land. Now Heather's got the letter from Westminster.
And it's written this week by Steve Bryan, our Member of Parliament. On Tuesday, I visited the Badger Farm Vaccination Centre, where volunteers were presented with a small gift for their public service. It was a form of service, but from the volunteering I did, it was clear those who gave their time really enjoyed the experience. As Parliament returns next month, COVID is clearly still around, but on any current evidence, crisis this is not. I and others have been vocal throughout the pandemic, and good job too, given no meaningful scrutiny or challenge came from the opposition parties. I said last month that the issue going forward is not COVID regulations or the Coronavirus Act, although that must be repealed. It is whether we really mean it when we say we must learn to live with COVID. Many battles lie ahead, as some find it harder to let go of the rules, and I'll bet we can all point to examples where, due to COVID, is now more the excuse than the reason. As Australia and New Zealand are having to admit, the idea that COVID could be eliminated was always hubristic. The Delta variant appears to have seen off the case for zero COVID. Our own scientific advisor has said herd immunity was unlikely to be reached, and COVID will become an endemic disease similar to flu. I agree with those experts who say we should stop reporting COVID case numbers and focus on those who are acutely unwell and in hospital because of the virus. Why do I say that? On Sunday, there were 30,000 people at St Mary's for the Manchester United game and 50,000 at Anfield in the COVID-hit North West to watch their team beat Burnley. Now, given it's increasingly clear the vaccines are not able to prevent all transmission, the return of the Premier League will surely push up infections. And if that genuinely is a problem, the Northern Ireland Health Minister described a small rise in cases as extremely worrying last weekend, then I don't understand the strategy we're following at all. The obsession with infection figures encourages paranoia, when vaccines have severely weakened the link between cases, hospitalizations, and deaths. And most cases are mild or asymptomatic. Learning to live with COVID means recognizing that fact, to follow the science. And it means returning to the office, releasing vaccinated travellers from expensive PCR testing on return from low-risk destinations, and setting our children free. This weekend, the National Education Union said schools should consider putting children back into bubbles next term if just two cases of COVID are confirmed. The quotes, "We do expect bubbles to be reintroduced in those circumstances and would hope that parents are supportive of head teachers who make these decisions," unquotes, it said. Given government guidance says the opposite, and knowing the damage we've already done to our young people, I wouldn't bet on that. I shall be asking questions in Parliament. If COVID is to become an endemic disease, then we must accept it will spread and possibly be with us forever. Thanks to the vaccine, this need not be an unsustainable burden on the National Health Service. Steve Bryan, Winchester and Chandler's Ward, Member of Parliament.
Now, the lighting up time ends on Friday the 27th of August at 6:10 a.m. and begins at 8:03 p.m. And on Wednesday the 1st of September, it ends at 6:18 a.m. and begins at 7:52 p.m. And we'll continue with further items of general news, starting with one read by Noel.
Yes, former MP remarries. Former Winchester MP Mark Oughton, whose battle with his sexuality led to a public downfall, says he is living his second life. The Mirror revealed that Mr. Oughton, 57, has married the man he met through dating app Tinder 6 years ago. He was MP from 1997 to 2010, but in 2006 was outed over a liaison with a male sex worker, despite being married with two children. Now, 15 years later, he describes himself and Belinda as the best divorced couple that we know. Both of his daughters, now in their 20s, spoke at his wedding and have welcomed husband Chris, 39, as part of their dysfunctional family. "I needed somebody who would embrace my children and deal with what we now describe as our dysfunctional family." Now living in Surrey, he added, "My mum's taken to Chris too. She'd found it hard with the horrible headlines, so she's just glad I've come out of it the other side and found somebody like Chris."
Takeaway habits are revealed. Winchester takeaway habits have been revealed by a delivery firm celebrating its fifth birthday in Winchester. The new data from Deliveroo, revealed Saturday at 8:30 p.m, is the most popular time for residents to order through their service. It also found that Wagamama served up the most popular dish. Their chicken katsu curry was the most ordered, followed by the boneless banquet from the KFC. In third was Pad Thai from Dim Tea, followed by Chipotle Roast Chicken Burrito from Overdraft Craft Ale Bar and Taqueria, and Chicken Caesar and Bacon in fourth and fifth, respectively. Since its launch in Winchester 5 years ago, more than 65 restaurants have signed up to the platform, creating work for more than 150 people. Of its restaurant partners, 60% are local independent restaurants, creating new revenue streams for homegrown culinary talent. Harrison Foster, Regional Director for the UK, said, "Our whole team here at Deliveroo are delighted that our rapid growth in Winchester over the past 5 years means that customers have more choice, restaurants are able to increase their revenue, and riders have the opportunity to choose well-paid, flexible work."
Paralysed dog mobile again with wheels. Experts at a Winchester animal hospital were quick to set the wheels in motion to transform the life of a paralysed golden retriever. 8-year-old Hamish was referred to Anderson Moore's veterinary specialist on Poles Lane in Hursley after his owners discovered him collapsed. Hamish had suffered spinal damage and was unable to walk, but he was soon out and about again after being harnessed to a specially designed set of wheels as he underwent an intensive course of physiotherapy at Anderson Moore's. There's a picture of him, actually, in what looks like a similar thing to a pram with the handle and four wheels, but completely different in its construction, which holds the dog up so that his feet are on the ground, but no weight is being carried by them. Laura Allmark, Anderson Moore's head of veterinary physiotherapy, said the retriever thoroughly enjoyed the chance to be mobile again and has gone on to make a good recovery. She said Hamish was the very first patient to use our new set of Eddie's wheels, which is a specially designed and manufactured clinic cart for injured or paralysed pets. He absolutely loved being able to mobilise safely and comfortably while fully supported in our new clinic cart. He certainly didn't want to be wheeled back into the hospital afterwards. He tried to put the brakes on. The wheels proved a big boost for Hamish, who was unable to use his left hind limb and had very little strength in his right. But they were also a huge help for the physiotherapy team as well. Large dogs, such as Hamish, are very difficult to mobilise, so he was an excellent candidate for Eddie's wheels, they said. The cart means we're able to get our bigger, non-ambulatory pets out easily without straining our backs, and this set of wheels is definitely going to be utilised a lot by our physiotherapy team in the future. It is fully adjustable, so it can be used for a wide variety of dogs, and hopefully, like Hamish, they will also go on to make real progress and good recoveries. Owners Tony and Jack Barr from Teddington, southwest London, were certainly full of praise for Laura and the Anderson Moore's team. And Tony said, "Anderson Moore's and Laura gave Hamish a level of care that many humans would be envious of, and we are extremely grateful and relieved."
Teen takes flight as she embarks on global solo trip. A teenager who grew up in Winchester is aiming to be the youngest woman ever to fly around the world solo, and her journey has begun. Zara Rutherford, 19, left Belgium on Wednesday last week for the trip, which will span 5 continents and 52 countries. The expedition is expected to end early in November, and according to her website, if completed, will make her the youngest woman to circumnavigate the globe solo, and the youngest person to do so in a microlight aircraft. Miss Rutherford has both British and Belgian nationality and is following in the footsteps of her parents, who are both pilots. She studied at St Swithin's School, and the solo trip is her gap year project before she goes to university, where she plans to study computer science or computer engineering with the long-term ambition of becoming an astronaut. Miss Rutherford is flying a Shark Ultralight, the world's fastest light sport aircraft, for the self-funded record attempt. Her preparation has included dunker training, practising how to get out of an aircraft underwater, as well as maintenance of her plane. The spare seat has been removed to accommodate an extra fuel tank and to avoid any questions about another person flying with her. The route will take her through the UK, Iceland, Greenland, Canada, and the US and Latin America to Colombia, then back north via Alaska to Russia, China, Indonesia, India, and the Middle East before ending in Belgium. This has been chosen to fulfil Guinness World Records requirements to be an around-the-world flight. Circumnavigation includes 70 planned stops with 19 rest days and is due to conclude back in Koordijk on November the 4th. The current female record holder is American Shyster Weiss, who was 30 at the time of her circumnavigation in 2017, while the youngest male record holder was 18 years old. And there's a lovely picture of the smiling teenager in T-shirt and jeans. The caption says Zara Rutherford alongside a Shark ultralight aircraft at Popham Airfield, but actually she's sitting on the plane looking very pleased with herself.
Major development in centre of town. A major development in the centre of Bishop's Waltham has been approved by councillors against the advice of their officers. the scheme comprising Fox's Garden Machinery, a youth hall and former NHS base between Winchester Road, Brook Street and Mort Lane, will be replaced by 24 houses and a new youth hall. City Council planning officers were recommending refusal, saying the scheme was too overdevelopment, was overdevelopment with too much crammed in. The applicants, Tom Francis from the trustees of the youth hall and County Homes Village Site Limited, said the plans had strong public support, with 48 letters including the parish council. The 50-year-old youth hall is nearing the end of its life. But there were 15 objections, citing overdevelopment and inappropriate parking. Objector Vivian Dury said residents in the nearby streets of Brook Street, Mort Lane and Southfield Close were being ignored. What is being proposed is too much on a small site, and little thought has been given to the impact on the lives of neighbours. A previous scheme for the site of houses and shops was also rejected for overdevelopment. Speaking for the parish council, Councillor Chris Ford said the scheme would improve the approach of the town centre and was one of the most important developments in recent years. Local city councillor Steve Miller supported the scheme, saying the current appearance detracts from the appearance of the whole of Bishop's Waltham. Planning Committee Chairman Therese Evans asked why there were no affordable homes in the proposal. Adrian Rutter of County Homes said the Fox site was previously a garage with diesel tanks still underground, hiking up building costs. Mr. Rutter told the committee, if we can't have this massing, we won't be able to bring the site forward. It's on a knife edge. Councillor Evans opposed the scheme, saying, I know this better than what was refused before. I know residents are fed up with the dreadful dilapidation of the site. I go past the site at least once a day. It's in a dreadful state, and I feel sorry and support a new youth hall, because that desperately needs to happen. Despite that, she said the scheme was overdevelopment, but five councillors voted to approve the scheme against advice, saying the public benefits trumped the objections. This decision comes 1 month after plans to convert a redundant petrol station into a hand car wash in Winchester Road, just a stone's throw away, was approved.
Teenager runs for his grandfather. A 16-year-old is set to complete his biggest challenge on Saturday in a bid to raise money in honour of his grandfather. Matthew Dodd will take on a challenge similar to a backyard ultra, where he will complete a 5.1-kilometre circular off-road course in Winchester every hour. Any time under the hour he completes the course, he's allowed to rest and eat until the hour is up, before going out again the next hour, and Matthew will continue to do this until he can go no further. Matthew from Oslebury said, for the actual race, I plan to do it in Winchester, where I've got a loop set out. I started out in March training for 12-kilogram runs, and in the last few months doing loops, practising marathons and half marathons to get ready for it, and continued, I just really like the running, but this is different. It's the biggest challenge I've done. My family are being really supportive, and for each loop I do, there will be someone running with me, so I don't get bored. Even my neighbours and school friends said they would come help. The challenge had been inspired by his grandfather, Barry, and there's a picture of the two of them grinning at each other, who has been diagnosed with dementia, and any money raised will go to Dementia UK. The funding will help research and support sufferers. And Matthew added, my grandfather really loved the idea. I asked him before I made it official, and he thought it was a great idea.
GPs facing huge COVID pressure. New data released by the NHS has highlighted the unprecedented demand faced by Hampshire GPs struggling to cope with problems caused by the pandemic. Issues include a shortage of family doctors, rising numbers of people with mental health problems, and the need to monitor the condition of patients on hospital waiting lists. GPs are also working their way through a huge backlog of routine appointments that have built up during the COVID crisis. Last month, the number of appointments offered in Hampshire was up 16.4% on July 2019 compared with the regional average of 11.8%. The number of emails, phone calls and video appointments soared by 132% over the same period. On August the 6th, Waterfront and Solent Surgery at Hythe revealed it had received 909 calls by 8:18 a.m. Patients accused the surgery of making them feel as if they were an inconvenience, but staff said they were working as hard as they could. Now the Wessex Local Medical Committees, LMC, which represents GPs in Hampshire and other parts of the South, is urging patients to be more understanding. Dr. Gareth Bryant, acting chief executive, said GP practices have faced unprecedented demand, partly due to delivering COVID vaccination program and supporting patients who are ill with coronavirus. The government has promised that more GPs will be recruited, but it's not happening at the speed or levels we need. Royston Smith, Tory MP for Southampton Itchen, added, GPs having to work exceptionally hard treating patients in these unprecedented times. Online appointments are no substitute for face-to-face. However, new technologies, in addition to physical appointments, are ensuring everyone can be seen as quickly as possible. Dr. Alan Whitehead, Labour MP for Southampton Test, said pre-pandemic problems had grown worse over the past 18 months. He added, the Conservatives have chronically underfunded the NHS for the last decade, and it's no surprise that they haven't been able to deliver on their promise of more GPs to help the situation. GP appointments can now be booked via the NHS app. Users will need to provide formal identification to sign in.
Council ready to help Afghan refugee groups. Winchester's council leader has written to the Home Secretary urging the government to do more for Afghan refugees. Councillor Lucille Thompson has written to Priti Patel following the collapse of the Afghan government, following the withdrawal of the NATO forces earlier this year. Last month, the City Council announced that it would find council accommodation for two Afghan families, but Councillor Thompson said it's willing to do more. Her letter states, Winchester City Council is ready and willing to play its part in supporting Afghan refugees who are being forced out of their country. Given the Taliban's history of brutality towards its opponents and repression of the rights of women and girls, the UK has a responsibility to do all it can to support the many Afghan citizens whose rights and freedoms are in deep jeopardy. The Afghan Citizens Resettlement Scheme, announced this week, proposes to resettle 5,000 Afghan nationals who are at risk due to the current crisis in its first year. This equates to only 8 Afghan nationals per UK parliamentary constituency. As a country, we could and should do more, much more, for the millions of Afghan citizens who are at risk of persecution at the hands of the Taliban. Winchester City Council stands by and is very willing to take a fair share of the Afghan asylum seekers that need to be rehomed following recent events. Where there are barriers to rehoming these Afghan citizens in our district, we will do everything possible to overcome them.
We've had a teenager running for his grandfather, and now we have parents walking for charities that helped save their son's life. A couple from Winchester took on an epic walking challenge for the two charities that kept their son alive when he was a newborn. Lindsay and Sam Hibbard, along with their son Finlay, tackled the 24-mile Clarendon Way walk to raise funds for both Wessex Heartbeat and Friends of the PICU, that's the Southampton University Hospital's Paediatric Intensive Care Unit. These two charities looked after Finlay after he was born in 2020 with a congenital heart condition called transposition of the great arteries, which means that two of his main heart vessels were the wrong way round, so oxygenated blood was unable to reach his body. He was in a critical condition, but was diagnosed immediately, collected from Winchester by Southampton's retrieval team within a few hours, and given two operations on the day of his birth, followed by open heart surgery a week later. He then spent 21 days in the University Hospital's Paediatric Intensive Care Unit and a further week on Southampton's Specialist Cardiac Children's Ward. It is this care that his mother and father want to recognise, and is why they chose to walk the well-known route between Winchester and Salisbury, raising £5,000. Now Lindsay and Sam plan to take on a different challenge every year in Age of Wessex Heartbeat and Friends of the PICU to show their continued support. Lindsay said the great work that these two charities do is fantastic. Without them, our gorgeous boy wouldn't be here now. Finlay is fit and well, so we had to do something to show our immense gratitude. I'm so grateful for everyone who sponsored us. The final amount raised made the day of walking totally worth it. They pushed little child Finlay in his pushchair. No, they didn't. They carried him in a very difficult... Do you know, I don't know how Finlay joined in, but he definitely wasn't walking because he's very little. Sam Ard added, "This challenge was just the start of our fundraising journey for these incredible charities. There'll definitely be more to come and hopefully many more monies raised." Wessex Heartbeat supports the Wessex Cardiac Centre in Southampton, and Finlay's consultant and surgeon have had their work supported by the Heart Charity. And John Munro, chief executive of Wessex Heartbeat, said, "Oh, we are so grateful for the money raised by Lindsay and Sam."
Soldier jailed over raping teenage recruit. This is a nasty little story with some unpleasant details, so you might want to skip it, but I don't feel it should be censored anyway. A married British Army instructor who raped a teenage recruit at a Hampshire base has been jailed for 8.5 years. Corporal Thomas Biggs pressurised the 18-year-old trainee into performing oral sex on him after getting her out of bed at 3 a.m. when he was drunk, a court-martial heard. The instructor's victim said she felt she had no other option after the 30-year-old kept saying to her, "You'll lose your job unless she complied." And the attack only interrupted when Corporal Biggs took a call from his wife, which distracted him, the hearing was told. His degrading behaviour may put off potential recruits joining the army, he was told. Sentencing Corporal Biggs, Judge Advocate Jane England said, "You owe all of the recruits a duty of care, but instead you abused your position and helped yourself to what you wanted. Your actions may also deter those with qualities armies are seeking from joining the armed forces, thinking they may be subject to similar degrading behaviour by one of the instructors." Bulford Military Court, Wilts, heard that the rape took place at the Army Training Regiment in Winchester. Wing Commander Michael Saunders, prosecuting, said Corporal Biggs had got the recruit, who was 18 years of age, out of bed in the early hours when he was drunk and ended up leading her to an isolated location and pressuring her into performing oral sex. He told her she would lose her job. He was a corporal instructor. She was a young recruit. He was drunk and she submitted to him, but she did not consent. The court heard that Corporal Biggs went to the recruit's room in the early hours and woke her up by calling her name. A video of the victim's interview with military police was shown in court. She told officers she could smell alcohol on the breath of Corporal Biggs after he woke her up, and she followed him into the corridor. She said, "I don't know what was going on. I thought I was receiving some bad news. He was really close to me. He kept looking around and asking, 'Do you know why you are here?' He kept saying, 'I saw you in your grey tight pyjamas. You're trying to impress all the corporals, trying to impress me.'" She explained that a girl from her room came out and went to the toilet, prompting Corporal Biggs to open a fire door and take the recruit through the door. The victim told police she complied because he told her she would lose her job. Corporal Biggs of the 3rd Armoured Close Support Battalion of the Royal Electrical and Mechanical Engineers was found guilty of one charge of rape. He was dismissed from the army and sentenced to 8.5 years in prison. And there is, thankfully, a picture of him, so that even though he's out of the army, he will be readily recognisable.
Unique bench is restored after vandalism. A vandalised and unique public bench in Winchester has been replaced. The semicircular bench at Hyde Abbey Garden has been restored almost a year to the day that saw one destroyed by vandalism on August the 19th last year. The replacement follows a large number of public donations and support from Winchester City Council. Leading the way has been the Friends of Hyde Abbey Garden, who say they are delighted to announce that the curved oak bench is now back on the side chapels of the Memorial Garden. The bench was built to the original design by specialist carpenters David Hayden and Rob Lyons. The Friends welcomed members and volunteers to help maintain this tranquil space, created in 2003 as Winchester's Golden Jubilee Project to commemorate the great church of Hyde Abbey. It was here where the remains of King Alfred the Great, his wife and son, who lived in Winchester, were finally laid to rest in 1110. And there's a picture of the five friends of Hyde Abbey Garden, five women, all smiling quite happily and sitting on this lovely semicircular wooden bench.
Staying in Hyde, the headline is Footpath Reopens After Collapse of Historic Wall. The footpath where part of a historic wall collapsed during heavy rainfall has now reopened after safety works were completed. A section of wall fell on the path between King Alfred Terrace and King Alfred Place in Hyde on July the 6th, close to Westview House on Hyde Gate. The footpath running alongside the wall had been closed for more than 2 months, but has now opened following work to remove the fallen bricks. A green wooden fence has now been constructed along the section of the damaged wall, while discussions are underway on the structure's future. Speaking previously, a City Council spokesperson said, "Well, the Council appointed a conservation structural engineer to assess the condition of Hyde Wall due to it being Grade 2 listed and of special architectural and historic interest. The engineer's report will advise on the most appropriate method of rebuilding, which is still under consideration. Depending on whether an application for listed building will be needed, which can take up to 8 weeks to complete, will influence how long it will take to complete reconstruction."
First drug designed to fight coronavirus. The medicines regulator has approved use of the first treatment in the UK using man-made antibodies to prevent and fight coronavirus. The Health Secretary, Sajid Javid, said approval of the first drug designed specifically for COVID-19 in the country is fantastic news, and he hoped it would be rolled out for patients on the NHS as soon as possible. The Medicines and Healthcare Products Regulatory Agency, MHRA, said the clinical trial data they had assessed has shown Ronapreve may be used to prevent infection, treat symptoms of acute COVID-19 infection, and can reduce the likelihood of being admitted to hospital due to the virus. Trials took place before widespread vaccination and before the emergence of virus variants. It is the first monoclonal antibody combination product approved for use in the prevention and treatment of acute infection from the virus in the UK. Monoclonal antibodies are man-made proteins that act like natural human antibodies in the immune system. The drug, developed by pharmaceutical firms Regeneron and Roche, is given either by injection or infusion and acts at the lining of the respiratory system, where it binds tightly to the virus and prevents it from gaining access to the cells, the MHRA said. Mr. Javid said, "The UK is considered a world leader in identifying and rolling out life-saving treatments for COVID-19 once they've been proven safe and effective in our government-backed clinical trials. This is fantastic news from the Independent Medicines Regulator and means the UK has approved its first therapeutic designed specifically for COVID-19. This treatment will be a significant addition to our armoury to tackle COVID-19, in addition to our world-renowned vaccination programme and life-saving therapeutics." And it's got name of a couple of drugs, but I can't read those. "We are now working at pace with NHS and expert clinicians to ensure this treatment can be rolled out to NHS patients as soon as possible." MHRA Interim Chief Quality and Access Officer Dr. Samantha Atkinson said, "We are pleased to announce the approval of another therapeutic treatment that can be used to help save lives and protect against COVID-19. Ronapreve is the first of its kind for the treatment of COVID-19, and after a meticulous assessment of the data by our expert scientists and clinicians, we are satisfied that this treatment is safe and effective. With no compromise on quality, safety and efficiency, the public can trust that the MHRA have conducted a robust and thorough assessment of all the available data. The regulators said the government and NHS will confirm how the treatment will be deployed to patients in due course. And there's a big picture of the health secretary, understandably looking quite pleased.
Volunteers dish out 60,000 vaccinations. The volunteers at Badder Farm Vaccination Centre have been rewarded after helping to administer more than 60,000 jabs. Members of the team were invited to a thank you event where they each received a £250 John Lewis voucher. This came towards the end of second jabs and the possible start of the autumn booster programme for vulnerable groups. Winchester MP Steve Bryan said the Joint Committee on Vaccination and Immunisation should issue an update on the boosters soon. The NHS has a long history of partnership between its staff and its volunteers, he said. We just couldn't have done this while maintaining any form of normal service without these wonderful helpers. We're all hugely grateful to them, and this was an important moment to say thank you. And there's a picture taken inside the vaccination centre of all of the volunteers. Some have got florries on, they've all got masks on, so you can't see that they're smiling or not.
Tribute to cyclist. A tribute has been paid to a funny and intelligent cyclist who died in a collision near Barton Stacey. The crash happened on an unnamed road, known locally as Newton Lane, between Barton Stacey and Newton Stacey, at around 3:30 in the afternoon, involving a cyclist and a Vauxhall Astra car. The air ambulance was called to the incident, but the cyclist, Oliver Gadney, aged 45, from Greenacres in Barton Stacey, died at the scene. An inquest has been opened at Winchester Coroner's Court. A post-mortem by consultant pathologist Dr. Adnan Al-Badri found the cause of death to be head injuries. Senior Coroner Christopher Wilkinson has adjourned the full inquest to March the 16th. Paying tribute to Mr. Gadney, his family said, "He was a beloved father and husband, son and grandson, as well as brother, uncle, nephew and loyal friend who was lost too soon. He lived life to the full. He was funny, intelligent, kind and humble, and his legacy lives on in his two girls. He'll never be forgotten." A 21-year-old Hampshire woman was arrested on suspicion of death by careful driving a vehicle while unlicensed or uninsured. She was released under investigation while officers continued their inquiries.
July borrowing eases as furlough costs reduce. Sorry, there's lots of statistics in this one. Government borrowing fell in July as the economic rebound continued to push up tax revenues and the amount spent on the furlough scheme reduced, according to official figures. Excuse me. The Office for National Statistics, ONS, said borrowing stood at $10.4 billion in June, down from $20.5 billion a year earlier. The ONS said last month's figure was the second highest July borrowing since records began in 1993. A consensus of analysts had predicted that public sector net borrowing would come in at £10.8 billion for the month. The data shows borrowing so far this financial year has reached £78 billion since the end of March, £61.6 billion less than the £139.7 billion borrowed in the same period a year earlier. The figures also reveal that government spending is starting to fall, dropping £2.9 billion on July 2020 to £79.8 billion. This was lower than the amount it received in taxes, which stood at £70 billion, although tax payments were £9.5 billion more than July 2020 as the economy started reopening fully last month. Public sector debt, net debt, now stands at £2.22 trillion at the end of July, or around 98.8% of gross domestic product, that's GDP. The highest ratio since the 99.5% recorded in March 1962. The UK's debt levels have ballooned amid the pandemic as the government had launched costly supportive measures to help households and businesses through the crisis. I hope you're following this. But signs of economic recovery and reductions in the amount needed each month are starting to emerge. Support schemes for workers, including furlough and self-employed grants, are now coming to an end in September, although some have warned businesses may need further help as the year progresses. Chancellor Rishi Sunak said, "Our recovery from the pandemic is well underway, boosted by the huge amount of support the government has provided. But in the last 18 months, have had a huge impact on our economy and public finances, and many risks remain. We are committed to keeping the public finances on a sustainable footing, which is why at the budget in March, I set out the steps we are taking to keep debt under control in the years to come." Isabel Stockton, research economist at the Institute for Fiscal Studies, said, "On a 12-month rolling basis, borrowing has been falling since April and falling faster than expected at the budget. But at 10.8% of national income, today's figures show that borrowing over the year to July was still high compared to the long-run pre-COVID average of 2.5%. Even if, as recent revisions to economic forecasts suggest, some of this improvement persists, the coming spending review will still require some very difficult decisions, and most likely more generous spending totals than currently penciled in by the Chancellor, given the myriad pressures on public services and the benefit system following the pandemic."
Driver 45 played chicken. A man who claimed his driving was reckless but not dangerous has been convicted by a jury. Sean Smith stood trial at Winchester Crown Court last week, charged with dangerous driving after he was involved in a crash on the A303 slip road. The court heard he was driving his black Volkswagen Golf along the slip road from the M3 at Junction 8 when he was tailgated by a blue Skoda Octavia. Rather than moving back to the inside lane and allowing the lunatic behind him to get out of the way, Prosecutor Janice Brennan said that Smith had acted dangerously in applying his brakes. When the Skoda, driven by Stuart Townsend, moved to the outside lane and attempted to undertake him, she told the court that he sped up and matched the speed of the other driver. And it was seconds later, when the Skoda had caught up with the slower moving traffic, that Townsend veered across in the front of the 45-year-old's Golf, flipping his own car and ending up on the roof in a ditch on the side of the carriageway. There's a photograph of that too. Having denied dangerous driving, the jury returned a guilty verdict, and Smith, of Malpass Road, Worthy Down, was banned from driving for a year and told to do 100 hours of unpaid work. He must pay £2,800 in prosecution costs and a victim surcharge. During the trial, Miss Brennan admitted that it was Townsend who had started it and was responsible for the main blame, but said that both men had driven dangerously. Addressing the jury, she said, "What does a competent, safe driver do in circumstances when there is an idiot right behind you, far too close? You may think an obvious answer is that you do not pick a fight with the idiot behind you. Sadly, as you will see in this case, Mr. Smith was not prepared to give way to Mr. Townsend behind him. Neither man was prepared to let the other man win." The court heard that when the police arrived on the scene of the crash on March 2nd, 2020, Smith had told officers it was a bit of a case of chicken. He said he couldn't go anywhere, which Miss Brennan said was incorrect, as was room for him to move over. Jurors were also shown a dash cam footage captured on the slip road, after which Smith admitted in hindsight his driving was reckless and that a sensible driver would have just let the Skoda pass. He told the court, "My perception was that I'd be immediately behind another car and then having to pull right. Seeing the dash cam, it's very clear that I would have to pull right again. I was waiting to get past the other cars. I wouldn't say there was plenty of it, but there was space. I was doing the speed limit. I wasn't doing anything wrong. I was maintaining course. I can see it was reckless, but I didn't consider it dangerous."
A dope dealer aged 21 tried to run from the police. A cannabis dealer who tried to run from police while wearing just his shorts as they raided his home has not been given an immediate prison sentence. police attended Kieran Stonier's home in Fraser Road, Kingsworthy, on July the 31st last year to execute a drugs warrant. As they got into position, Stonier climbed over a double gate at the back of the house and was caught by two waiting officers, Winchester Crown Court heard on Friday. Prosecutor Andy Houston said the 20-year-old was wearing only his shorts when he tried to escape police, and was later seized, who later seized a large number of items relating to cannabis. Mr. Houston listed a number of items taken, including a duffel bag holding two bags containing a kilo each of the drug worth £10,000, 250 grams of cannabis valued at £1,500, along with various amounts of herbal cannabis, a set of digital scales, and more than £2,000 in cash. Stonier's silver iPhone was also taken and examined. It showed text messages consistent with being concerned in the supply of various types of cannabis. The prosecutor added that Stonier was buying cannabis in kilo and half kilo weight and using others to sell cannabis on his behalf. In mitigation, Alexander Wilson said that Stonier became involved in dealing cannabis to repay debts to his dealers after he became addicted. Miss Wilson told the court that he had a limited function and was under the direction from those above him who supplied him with the phone to sell cannabis, and added, "I think this has been a scare for him. He does not understand how serious this offence was, but he does want to turn his life around." Stonier pleaded guilty to being concerned in the supply of £13,075 worth of cannabis between July the 1st, 2019 and August the 1st, 2020, and was handed a 14-month sentence, but it's suspended for 18 months, during which he must complete 19 thinking skills program sessions, 20 rehabilitation days, and 120 hours of unpaid work.
Sudden flap as bird swoops in on its prey. Sharp-eyed Beatrice Cooper was alert to a sudden flap in her back garden in Winchester. The 16-year-old spotted a bird of prey swooping down into the garden on Edgar Road to capture food and was quick to snap a series of photos. Her mum, Vanessa Cooper, told the Chronicle, "Not what you expect to see in town, quite amazing. The bird is either a peregrine falcon or a sparrowhawk. Peregrines have colonised the city in recent years, first on the Hampshire Police headquarters on West Hill, and latterly, following that building's demolition, the cathedral, only a short flight to the Cooper's garden. But sparrowhawks are hunters of songbirds, and so spotted fairly often in back gardens and other residential areas. And I must say, sharp-eyed Beatrice Cooper has got a couple of lovely photographs, one from a distance of the hawk sitting on the garden wall, and then a close-up of the hawk, which looks quite powerful, and it seems to have a deceased bird of prey, a deceased body of a, looks like a pigeon. And I think, from my experience in my garden, that that is, in fact, a sparrowhawk, not a falcon. Anyway, it's beautiful pictures.
Art fencing removed. Safety measures have been removed from the work of art in Winchester Cathedral Close. The Dean and Chapter placed fencing around the luminous motion, the interactive pillar that stands close to the entrance to the Close from the square. It was cordoned off last month over concerns that people could be hurt by touching the metal structure in the recent hot weather. It's thought to be the first time it has been fenced, even though the artwork has been in place every summer since around 2002.
Charity football match boost for the Trinity Centre. Winchester City and Saints Legends came together for a charity football match and raised £4,300 to help the homeless. Crowds gathered for the game, which saw famous names like Matt Letissier and Glenn Cockerell fighting it out on the pitch to claim the victory. And Phil Goff, who organised the match, said, "We are so pleased to have been able to host this event and are grateful for the tremendous support from the local community. Close to 900 people came, and so we're delighted to make such a significant contribution to the great work undertaken by Trinity Winchester." Sue McKenna, the chief executive at Trinity, said, "We're blown away by the amount raised by Winchester City Football Club. Can't thank them enough for choosing to support Trinity in this exciting new way."
Afraid that concludes the extracts for the week ending 27th of August 2021. Thank you to our editors, Sonia Phillips and Sheila Shepherd. Thanks to our copying and dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And thanks to today's other readers, Heather Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
And Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
And from me, Roy Faithful, thank you for listening. Goodbye for now. And I hope you stay safe and well in the week ahead. When you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and please place the correct address label on the front of the wallet too, and return the wallet as soon as possible. Thank you and goodbye again.